The following podcast is brought to you by Iconic Nation Media. Welcome to Season 5 of Level Up Podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Levy. I'm here to guide you on a journey of personal growth and fulfillment. Join me as we delve into the challenges of both business and personal life, aiming to discover our true selves and connect more deeply with the world around us. On this podcast, we'll explore the topics that inspire and empower us to become the best version of ourselves. From book reviews to interviews with iconic individuals, we'll have insightful conversations that resonate with your journey. And a big thank you to our sponsors, the Boys and Girls Club of America, Greater Conejo Valley, and Lovey's Deli for supporting the show and helping us bring these valuable discussions to you. Please share, rate, and review the podcast. And thank you so much for listening. You can also leave your comments at Kimberly Levy on social media. Thank you for your feedback and thank you for listening. Hello and welcome back to Level Up Podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Levy. Today, I'm sharing with you one of my favorite people. Her name is Dr. Karen, who is a clinical psychologist. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She teaches, lectures, and publishes in the area of early development and attachment styles. She is an expert in early development and its effect on adulthood. Her popular educational vignettes entitled Moments to Consider were heard on local radio for 10 years. In addition to her private practice in Thousand Oaks, California, Dr. Karen works with corporations and small businesses as a coach, motivational speaker, and consultant. She's also a mother, wife, and dog mom. So I'm really excited to share our conversation with you today. And in fact, it's so meaty that I'm breaking it up into two different episodes because it's so long. Now, here are some of the highlights. We first speak about the formative years and behavioral patterns, so that attachment from childbirth and the impact that your parents and their expressions, emotions, and everything have on you as a baby or on babies. We also speak about neuroplasticity and changing perspectives. We cover navigating challenges of aging parents and what that truly entails and what the give and take is like. With that, Dr. Karen, welcome to Level Up Podcast. Dr. Karen, thank you so much for joining us at Level Up Podcast. I am so excited to have you here with us today. How are you?
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you. Thank you, Kimberly.
You are just the cutest. I can't even take it. Okay. You're also brilliant. So, you know, not to diminish your intellect, but you are adorable as well.
Well, listen, you know, it's fun to have a little bit of everything.
Yes,
if you can.
The whole package.
Right.
I love that
right.
for us. I love that for you.
Yes.
Okay. So you have such a plethora of knowledge and I look forward to having you on. I'm already excited for your next episode because you guys, she sent me a list of like 3 pages worth of topics that she can cover as a clinical psychologist. And I was like, oh my God, I want every single one of these. So my goal is to have her back as a recurring guest because you'll see why. Okay. So
Thank you. Well, it started a long time ago when I got the idea that it would just be fun to do small segments on everyday stuff, just stuff. So I started a little radio program long ago, long before podcasts were ever even thought about, called A Moment to Consider. And in that, I ended up doing it for 10 years. So I wrote about a lot of different things and thought a lot about so many everyday life stuff. And that's what I hope we'll get into.
Oh, we will, because we all need to know whatever you know in your brain, because I can't even tell you from the time that we last had lunch, I am not exaggerating. There must have been at least every other day I'm like, oh, Karen knows about this. I need to ask her. Dr. Karen knows. So I want to get into it because
I don't know. I don't think my husband would agree with you.
You know, the ball and chain, how that
right.
goes. So, okay. So there's a lot of topics that we cover here, a lot of unpacking of stuff. So mm-hmm. you're definitely in the right place mm-hmm. with us. And one of the things that I thought we could start with is a look at our infancies. Mm. So what
does our infancy, what impact does our infancy have, you know, as babies on the rest of our lives and all of the reasons why it matters, like psychologically?
Oh, Kimberly, you picked the perfect place to begin because it all begins. Yes, well, it begins in not at conception, but the birth. Certainly, there is much going on in the tummy, and we can talk about that another time, you know, especially the last 3 months, the last 8 weeks, where there's a great deal of brain development and the beginning of all of that. But at birth and infancy is when the brain takes its largest leap to become known and to become everything that is going to flower and bloom and bud starts there. And I love to talk about the earliest times of what a baby needs and how we learn to be seen. Mm-hmm. And the word seen and known is so important in parenting today. And although I think we parent so different, it's interesting to look at different generations of parents. Think about your parents, think about your grandparents and your great-grandparents. The idea of how we were supposed to and let the baby cry. Don't let the baby cry. Pick the baby up. Don't pick the baby up. Feed the baby every 4 hours, whether they're hungry or not. Feed the baby anytime the baby wants to be fed. So look at all these different ways of thinking about what to do with this baby.
No wonder we're all struggling as parents. Thank you for the validation. I can already move on to the next topic. That's all I needed to know. Quick sanity check.
Well, you know what's funny is, I mean, there's no perfect. And the one thing that every baby comes into this world with is the moment they open their eyes, they see another. And that another can be mama, it can be a papa, it can be grandmas, but they see others. And that's the very first reflection that they get about who they are. And one of the most interesting, and one day if we're ever on air, I can show you a beautiful picture that says it all, which is when the baby looks at mama and mama has a smile, the baby actually mirrors that. And babies as young as just a couple months old, if mama sticks her tongue out, baby will stick the tongue out. This is an infant. So right away, we know that this baby is seeing mama and is actually learning and feeling who to be at that moment. So I think that's so remarkable. And to see these pictures of these little tiny ones, that where mama is got a smiley face and baby smiles. And then, which is so important, when the researchers asked mama to be still-faced, which is to take all expression and to not smile, that agitates the baby. So what does that tell us now? You know, we have to really consider that when mama goes still, which is still might mean when mama's not there, when mama is empty, when mama is depressed, when mama is angry, that is taken in and actually metabolized by that little guy or gal. And that is put inside that little baby. Now, it doesn't mean that mama can't be still or angry or chill or anything else, because it's not one experience that matters. It's a huge combination of experiences. But what that tells you is that this baby needs to be seen.
Mm. You know what's really weird is that, so London had a nanny when I had a corporate job her first year, from like 6 months to 18 months for that year. And our nanny was very reserved, more shy. I'm not shy. I'm very outgoing. And I started to see her disposition be more withdrawn. And it wasn't at the point where it made sense. Like, I know a milestone is at 18 months, they start to have stranger danger and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was before that. And so I kind of was like, is she taking on, like, here's a exact example. When I would take her to her music class, I would be there sitting with her, dancing around, getting her to engage. Because the whole point is engagement with others, right? Like, you and I can dance at home.
Yes.
But I want you to feel comfortable and socialize you and to, you know, learn to enjoy music.
Yes.
And the company of others in that experience, et cetera.
And the safety with mama there.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a new experience for the baby, for the babies. When our nanny would take her, she would sit her in her lap and they were just more like observing as opposed to engaging.
Yes.
And it's a reflection that the nanny's, you know, personality is different than mine, right?
Exactly. And that the baby was exactly what we're talking about, mirroring. Mm-hmm. And during that time, actually having to find a place how to be. You know, when you're talking about the importance of infancy, that was a time in your baby's life where she learned how to be a certain way with one person mm-hmm. and another way with you, which is also could go into the slot of flexibility
right.
and or ability to read, you know, they talk about reading the room. Mm-hmm. Well, all that stuff comes from infancy.
Wow. Wow. So how much of that time forms their personality, like permanent? How much permanence is it that occurs at that time?
The experts have always said, and during my early training, I was lucky enough to be involved in some early childhood stuff, early childhood, both my own children were a part of a study, the first 5 years of each of their lives. And that was fascinating with me being the parent. So at that point, I wasn't a clinician yet. I was just a parent. And at times, a parent who wasn't always a perfect parent, and a parent who was frightened, and a parent who probably got angry too frequently, and a good parent at times, and a happy parent. So, you know, a whole mixed bag. So that particular kind of input from 0 to 5 is really, really the years that shape who we're going to be. And then we add on that, you know, there are people that have come into my office and they say, I don't want to have to talk about, was I breastfed? I don't want to have to talk about how I feel about my mother. None of that's important. I'm talking about why I got fired. I want to talk about why I can't stay in a relationship, or that Joe did this to me at the office and he's a jerk. And I want to know why this happens. So in all of those examples, every single one of them has to connect in some way to the earlier lessons in life and some of the mirroring that went on or not, how we came to feel about ourselves, who we are.
Wow. I feel like there's a lot of child-related questions that I could fill up the whole hour with. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pivot us, but I'm gonna put a pin in this because Abby and I have a parenting podcast, and I think we can dive really deeply into the parenting related questions around this.
Yes.
But I love to know that this is in fact
really
a formative time. And that's why when you're in a therapy session or whatever, they really start at the beginning.
Yes, yes. And you know what's so interesting is some people actually are afraid to go into therapy, and that can be another whole discussion, because they don't want to go into and start at the beginning. They feel like it's a waste of time, it's a waste of money, and they don't know that it has value. It does have value. However, there are ways to not have to go into what happened early, because a good therapist or somebody who's got really good training, you can start with today. And by the end of a certain period of time, whatever the issues that you want to bring up, we're going to be able to connect some of those to an earlier time. Mm-hmm. We may not be talking about infancy, but we may be ending up talking about your teenage years or when something first began that you can remember. So everything can eventually tie back. Nothing stands alone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right, you know, Kimberly. I think going into just infancy as its own conversation is a great thing.
It is. And I think what's so fascinating amongst a myriad of other things is I find that you go from being so malleable and so impressionable and a sponge and all these things to it being harder and harder to adapt and so rigid. And I actually find like a lot of my time is spent, and people around me, I know at my age, almost 40, we have almost the opposite problem. And I'm really curious about why is it so hard as we get older? Like, is there an anatomical reason why, neuropsychology, whatever it is, why is it so hard for us to get out of our stuck patterns and behaviors after coming out of, you know, our young formative years?
Such good questions. Kimberly, you ask quite amazing
questions. I've been dying to ask her this because I really need to know.
Well, you know, if you think about it, rigidity is, think about a mold, that something beautiful comes out if you pour liquid, whatever, plaster or something, even a jello mold, you use the mold to form this beautiful pile of jello. And I think that what we do in becoming rigid is that we find rules. As you learn from childhood on what works and what doesn't, you adapt a kind of style mm-hmm. that works. And as you get older, in your 20s, 30s, and then into your 40s and 50s, that becomes your mode operandi. That becomes who you are. And some of them, those aspects of you, are great. But some of them, and this is what I work on when I do coaching, when I do therapy, when I do talks, is I ask people to think about something that works really well for you. Mm-hmm. One of your pieces of just being, your humor, your ability. You, Kimberly, are so wonderful at setting people at ease. It's been just such a delight to get to know you. So that's something that works for you. There are other things, I'm sure, that if you give yourself a moment to think, that are a piece that you find yourself doing that isn't always in your best interest, but you've done it anyway. So then you can give that some thought, because that probably molded itself a long time ago. And you can do some thinking about how and when and where, and does it work now? Because it isn't hard when you give yourself the room to think about it, to make the changes. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so interesting about learning more about yourself. I have always thought, and this is why for me going back to school after I had children, after I was divorced, was so much fun, because it felt like I was getting a degree in learning about myself, therefore learning about lots of other people. And I think in order to be less rigid, in order to feel more comfortable in your own self, is you got to take a peek. Mm-hmm. And you're not always going to like what you see, but seeing it and befriending it and giving yourself a chance to get to know these parts and why they developed is a great gift.
I feel like I need to go to therapy. Seriously.
Well,
today I had, it's so weird you just said all of that, because today I was standing in my laundry room and, you know, after running around cleaning up and doing this and doing that, and I don't know why, but it hit me like a ton of bricks that there's certain things that I want to work on that aren't serving me. And I just kind of stood there and I just like digested it. It was the weirdest thing. It was such a deep, honest realization.
How wonderful.
It didn't feel wonderful. I'm going to be very honest with you. It really didn't, actually.
Well, it yes. And that's part of how you're right. The when we catch ourselves feeling not good in those moments. But if you think about it now, it's offering you an opportunity.
That's okay. So that is what I came to. So after I had this chat, I was therapizing myself. It's cheaper. Not as good quality. You get what you pay for. But I will say, after I kind of like had my realization in my moment, I actually took a deep breath because I realized this is an opportunity.
Exactly.
I can change. And it actually set me a little bit free.
It
was really
absolutely
weird.
Absolutely. There's your deep breath after you've felt the ugh about
yes.
it all.
Yes.
Then you get to go, there's another possibility.
What's your hourly rate and are you booked next Tuesday? Because I think we need a deeper dive, not recorded. Okay. Sorry.
Very cute. You're very cute.
Okay. That's helpful. Is there something from a neuroscience perspective around like something with our synapses hardening or they're not firing as frequently? Do you know anything about that?
Well,
why we remain stuck as we age?
I really think, actually, because you and I, and I guess we'll have to get this over with, and maybe we'll have to do it several times as maybe new listeners tune in, but you are on the younger and the beginning side, you know, with younger children, and I have been around for, you know, a long time, and although I still feel young, you know, my body tells me that I've been around, you know, have lived many, many centuries. Actually, decades, but sometimes it feels like centuries. Just depends. That was an interesting slip, wasn't it? Centuries instead of decades.
I thought it was actually quite funny.
Yeah.
She's outer-worldly.
Yeah. Yeah. So talking about, you're talking about neurons, neuroplasticity, you're talking about brain development. And in that area, what they've learned in the last few years is we have more neuroplasticity than we ever thought we did. We used to think that years ago, I probably when my grandparents were in their 40s and 50s, they began to be, quote, old. Now, I'm giving a little bit of a clue of, you know, what my age might be. I have grandchildren that are in their 20s. So, and I have children that are in their 40s and 50s. So each generation is learning more and more about the brain and its neuroplasticity. And I stress that because that means you have lots of opportunity to shift and change. And that this idea of being stuck is really, it's not valid because we continue to the neuroplasticity means that there is the ability to repair. And so, yes, there is going to be some aging process, which has some damaging effects, but there's also the process of new neurons and new electrical firing and new connections being made so that we can regain and add new things. And interestingly enough, when you were talking about that, when I look at older people, older 70s and 80s and even 90s now, because now 90s has become the new, that's now becoming more and more possible and people doing well into their 90s. And what you find with people that have made peace, and this isn't true all over the world, and these are not, anything I say is not absolute. There's always, you know, exceptions, and nothing is, and I will say that I know many things and I know nothing all at the same time.
And that sounds familiar.
I think that's important for all of us to know that we don't know. We don't know a great deal. But actually, I think that being in your 60s, I see people actually lightening up and going, that doesn't matter anymore. It just doesn't matter anymore. Or I'm letting that go. Or that used to be so important to me. Now, you know, a sunny day or some beautiful flowers or a great walk or something. That feels great. And I never used to value that. So those are changes that talk about loosening, not tightening.
Mm-hmm. I see that with even our own family members. So there's something that has been on my heart and my mind for a very long time, and I think you are finally the perfect person to address this with me. I don't hear a lot of people speaking about aging parents. And the thing that strikes me about the fact that I don't hear that much about it is that here I'm sitting there going, we have prepared, we've had internships, we've had classes, we've had all kinds of preparation in our life, prep for anything, no matter how big or how small. Nothing prepares you for aging parents, and nobody talks about it. And I have to say, it's one of the hardest parts of life is to figure out how to deal with aging parents, if they're well or if they're not well in particular. And I just, you know, I would love to hear any advice or insights you have about, you know, tools or resources or just any of your thoughts on what we do when our parents are getting older and we kind of like that dynamic shifts from,
yes,
you know, they're parenting us to now we need to go and support them, which is a privilege. And, you know, I have to say that's a privilege. But what are your thoughts on the subject?
And I think not everybody feels that way, which is a shame. Because, again, think about societies in Asian societies, they have always revered aging.
Yes.
And they have part of their life planning is to include and take care of their elders, mm-hmm. and that their elders really are the ones they go to and hold a deep respect and love for them until the very end. I think we're talking about something societal in Western society, where we have put so much emphasis on youth and beauty, and what we want to actually deny is that is a fleeting, it's a beautiful and wonderful and joyous time of life to feel beautiful, to feel energetic, to feel all these things. And aging then happens, but when you're talking about it, Kimberly, what strikes me as you ask that is that aging happens at a time where you're the busiest. And that is one of the things, and especially think about this with women. Women have come into the workplace. Women are finding their footing. Back in when I first started, I was one of the first females to join with a psychiatrist, and I'll give you his name, Dr. James Masterson, who wrote a great deal about personality disorders and early developmental traumas and such. I was the first woman in his entire group to be able to lecture with him, you know, and to be able to be part of his group. So, and that wasn't that long ago. So we've seen in the last 20 years a huge increase, and there's going to be ever more. So here you are, a woman in her prime, And your parents are growing older, and we have not really had that conversation about working women, women in the most powerful, productive time in their life, juggling both a career and moms and dads that are not the same as they were at your age. So yeah, it is not an easy, it's not an easy time. And I think that having conversations about it and the awareness that you're bringing to it, and the people that are listening can know that this is a natural phenomena, and it's going to take society to perhaps change our minds a little bit about elderly parents and how we want to protect them, how we want to educate, what resources we want to allot, how we want to help our younger generation know more about what they need, and how to open those kinds of conversations. Those are really important.
Yeah. I think it's hard because usually everything's fine until it isn't. So some kind of traumatic health event happens with a parent. Oftentimes it's out of left field.
Right.
And it's shocking. And, you know, you get put from like, you're in a state of, like you're saying, you're prime, you're working, you're doing your thing, everything's great until you get a phone call and something's not. And when that phone call comes, right, it hits you like someone punched you in the gut.
Right.
And you go into full panic mode. And for me, I can say what's been helpful is moving closer to my
parents. Yes.
And I know you and I just shared that. So why, and this actually goes back to your comments about the Asian society, and I think Hispanic cultures are more, you know, in that
family.
The intergenerational living situation all of a sudden makes perfect sense to me. So, and I think you did the same thing with your parents. Is that right?
Correct. That my mother and father had their own very involved life, and I had moved a ways away from that. But at a certain point, it became very clear that we needed to live close together. And at that point, their life, and maybe theirs was more orderly. What you're talking about, though, does happen and can upend many young people's lives. And I think now with housing shortages, and there is some conversation about the possibility of maybe we could reinstate what used to be. If you think about it, I know if I'm recalling my history of remembering stories of immigrants, my grandparents, that they did live with their sisters and brothers and mother and father, and everybody stayed pretty tight and close. And then there was this great migration of everyone saying, well, I'm going to live in Europe, or I'm going to live on the other side of the country. And that does work during one's prime for a period of time. But then if you are close to your family and you want to be there, it requires you making some decisions, and often hard decisions.
Yes, it really does. And I know not everyone's close with their parents. Our family's very close. But I will also say that I think when there's physical distance, it actually brings on more emotional stress to the situation, as at least the child. I don't know how the parent feels in this situation, but because of the back of your mind, you're worried. You don't know. You can't just check on them. So I actually find that living close to my parents now has really alleviated my stress, because I am constantly able to
check in. Yes. And you know? Yet do your own thing.
Right.
Yes.
And you know what's interesting too about this age with our, like, in my, I'm just sharing my family dynamic because it's really my only, you know, benchmark of one. Sorry.
It's good enough. It's very good.
It's not statistically significant, but here we are. You know, I find that we actually are doing a dance. So some days my parents come over and they're helping me. So for example, my mom will come over and she'll help me cook, and she's a wonderful cook, and she'll teach me things, and I really soak up those moments to see exactly how she chops the onion a certain way. You know, I'm really paying attention to every little detail, because, you know, your mom does it only the way your mom does it, and nobody does it like your mom. So some days it's a take. You know, the next day it might be, for example, they need you to come over and check on them. So it's a give. So we're in this really beautiful dance that, again, to me, it's a privilege, because we're close enough where we can do it.
Yes.
And they're here and I'm present with them. But it's this give and it's a take. But the days that it's a give, it's one, yes, it's stressful, like you just pointed out, because we're at the height of, you know, we're balancing work, we're balancing kids, we're balancing everything. And then it's another give. But it's also scary, because unless you have some kind of medical background, which I have zero of, you know, you don't really know how to gauge if they are okay or not.
Right, right. And that, I think what you're talking about also, and this, I'm laughing because this may throw you into saying that you need to be in therapy, but, you know, this is... This is one of the things that I think it's a transition in your lifetime when we are at the height of our career and we are struck with the knowledge of immortality. And that really doesn't happen when we're, certainly doesn't happen when we're teens. It doesn't happen in our 20s. It begins to happen later. And I think that when you get that first brush, however that is, you begin to assess things differently. And you're very fortunate that you are very close. There are many people that they grow up and they lose touch. I hear stories of people that have not had connections with their brothers or sisters or parents, or they just have gone their separate ways. And you have an elderly population that is quite lonely.
Mm-hmm. I know, that really breaks my heart. You know what's really great? My mom, she plays bridge and mahjong. Mm-hmm. And she's in there, she's 72, and she goes there. And even on days where she might not be feeling 100%, she can go and use her mind. And she's joined by, you know, people well into your 90s, into their 90s.
Absolutely. And when you go and you surround yourself around other people, you feel better. Your physicality, and they know that touch and connection increases serotonin, increases oxytocin, and those are all the good, good hormones that make us feel great.
Yes. Yeah. So I would say it feels really good to be able to have a welcoming kind of boisterous home that I'm providing for my parents to come join. And, you know, they like it in small doses, and I don't blame them.
And then they're happy to leave.
They get their serotonin fill.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the joy. That's the joy of being a grandparent. And that's the other thing, is you have to recognize too, from our perspective, that we have lived the years of being a parent.
Yes.
We have done many of the things that you are doing, and that it is a pleasure to watch and to be the observer and not necessarily a heavy participant.
Right.
Because for some, it was difficult and they're ready to be done. And they're ready to think about, like you were saying, you know, what am I going to do today? I'm going to go and be with my friends and play mahjong, or take a walk, or go to the local Y or the library, or, and be around others that are facing some of the same things that I am facing. Mm-hmm. So that's not a bad thing.
No.
But I think what you're talking about is trying to balance it.
Yeah. I think I just want to acknowledge, you know, for folks that are listening, if they experience this, that it is a dance, and there's good days and there's bad days. There's give, there's take.
Mm-hmm. And they're not alone.
No, they're not alone. And there's fears, because, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, you don't know what to do in certain situations, but, you know, you can always be resourceful. There's a lot of resources. It's easier than ever. The great news about having, well, the great news about today's day and age is if you need, for example, like your family member needs somebody to come help in their home, you can easily find those resources nowadays
with
access to the internet, social workers at hospitals, et cetera. There's a lot more resources out there.
Yes.
So it makes it easier to figure out.
Which is pretty interesting because you were talking about how in some ways we've sort of, ageism has taken away a lot of pride of the elderly, that there is a shame in being old. Yet, we really do have a system that provides all kinds of goodies that we've never had before. Mm-hmm. When my parents were aging, there was no things called senior concerns where they will send somebody to do your shopping or they will drive you to the doctor, you know, and there is no charge so that it isn't a money thing. You don't have to be rich in order to find help.
Yes.
And that should also give, I think, the younger generation a chance to breathe because this is your turn. You deserve this.
Yeah. I think when you get, I think knowing your boundary or your limit with self-preservation is the flip side of it, is like sometimes if there's an aging parent or any, you know, sick family member, then sometimes you almost have to say, okay, this is what I can give and this is what I can't. And you have to be very honest about that so that you don't take away from your ability to function in your daily life.
Yes. And if you are close enough and lucky enough to be close to your family, to have that conversation with them.
Yes.
Because they remain, even though they're older, they still love you. You are still their child, even though they may be hampered at giving and doing those things that are important.
Yes.
Physically.
So, yeah, I think what I take from this conversation, and thank you for talking it out with me, is like, one, you're not alone if you have aging parents and you feel that stress of trying to figure out the balance. Two, if you're lucky enough to be near your parents, enjoy those moments of the giving and the taking both and just really soak up those moments and, you know, be present with them. You know, three, there's a lot of resources out there and it's okay if you have to set a boundary for your own mental health. It doesn't make you selfish. It doesn't make you not a good child.
You should not be feeling, I don't like to use the word, but you don't need to have to feel, Kimberly, as if you, the younger person, has to do it all.
Yes.
There is help.
Yes. So that's all, it's all great stuff. It's all things that I'm learning. See, we're talking about stuff. I just used the word stuff.
Yep.
You said you want to talk about stuff. I told you I got plenty of stuff.
There is stuff up the wazoo, as we say.
She's for sure sending me a bill after this. I know it. This is, you guys are basically sitting in on my therapy session, so thank you. I hope you're getting something from it, because I certainly am. All right. That is it for today. Thank you very much for listening, and be sure to follow us at Iconic Nation Media and send us a direct message and comment on some of our posts so that we can hear your feedback and incorporate them into our show. We appreciate you listening, and we look forward to catching you next week.